Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of That Digipod. As you know, my name is Dipesh, I'm a digital product owner here at BT and your host for this session. Now today's episode is a really fantastic one because I'm joined by one of the world's most strategic and commercial digital product people, Ms. Shweta Sharma.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction and thank you for having me.
No worries, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling great, excited to be in the new offices.
I know, everyone who comes here gets really excited because the views are insane.
Right? Views are excellent.
Exactly. So Shweta, you have got such a cool history and I guess future coming up as well.
I hope so.
But I want to start kind of right at the beginning with you before we get into your build, measure, learn journey, because you were a fighter pilot or you're in the RAF for a small amount of time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. So whilst I was at university, I joined a thing called the University Air Squadron and I had the honour of flying fast jets for a summer, which was fantastic and completely nothing to do with what I do now. But actually, you know, some of those lessons you learn in different environments, you take forward throughout your career. But yes, it's definitely the thing that people are most interested about my career.
No, I mean, it's just one of many cool facts, I think. But how do you go from doing something like that into getting a passion for products and building things?
Yeah. So I think my career, I'd summarise it into two halves. One is the area where I learnt the most. And I actually started out in strategy consulting, where I got exposed to products and services. And I did things like build theme parks in Dubai, build hotels, right the way through to doing traditional mergers and acquisitions and due diligences. So I got a taster of what strategic thinking was about. And I thought, do you know what? We can really change the world with products and services. And from there, I moved on to Disney. Then onto Xbox, and the common theme across those companies was building great products and services using technology. That's what I'm excited about. I like changing things, I like breaking things and seeing better ways to put them back together. So that would be my kind of learn story, you know. I also, during COVID, set up my own travel tech startup.
Cool.
It's very, very early stages, and I'm learning. You know, I'm a single founder, so I'm doing everything myself, but proof's in the pudding, really. It's about, you know, getting your hands dirty and seeing how things are made and how they work. And that's what I really believe is great product, is that strategic vision, but also in the weeds and in the detail of how does it really work together. The second part of my career, I'm still learning, but I'm more focused on sharing. So I work with lots of startups, really thinking about how do we refine their products and service and how do we scale it. I mentor women in tech. I mentor everyone, but specifically women in tech I'm passionate about. And also I'm on BT's technology advisory board and I'm about to take on some more advisory positions with other similar companies.
That's so cool. So a real like breadth of experience there, to be fair, across loads of different industries. How have you gone about setting yourself up at the start? So if you go into a business at the beginning, how do you look for what the problem statements are to, you know, really help these people improve?
Yeah, good question. I think there's two parts to that as well. One is who I am. And I think we tend to shape ourselves into the organization that we join. And I think that's a bit of a miss because I really believe people have superpowers. And it's about knowing your superpower and taking that to an organisation because that's where you really add value. And for me, common things are having fun, you know, I say reimagining things, solving complex problems. I love that. And I also love working with smart people. And the minute I can recognise I can add value and I can also learn, it is a great space for me. In terms of how I think about solving a problem, I would really think about the why are we doing this? And I think this is a bit where most products and services fail. We seem to take a customer saying, yes, I would use this, or yes, I like this, or yes, it's a problem, as enough. And for me, it's not enough. It's are they motivated to solve it? So have they actually taken steps to try and find a solution? That's the first thing. If you don't have that, is it something that they do every single day? Is it a high usage thing? Or is it a third thing where it's a no-brainer, where we can provide a solution that's so easy and intuitive to use and there's value in it for doing it, then a user will do it. So have a problem that is significant enough that the users want to solve. The second thing I would talk about is being obsessed with the outcome. So we often get focused on which tech are we using, what's our process, you know, are we agile, are we waterfall? For me, it's about what are we solving for consumers and how do we make that better? And if you focus on that, it tends to result in a great product or service. And the final piece, well, actually, no, two more pieces. I'd say simplicity is key. And I think this is really important. We tend to overspec. We tend to add extra functions, which are all really good and helpful and useful. But more complicated products and services take longer to come to market, are more complex to build, more expensive to build. So I really believe in start with something quite simple and do it really, really well and use that as a platform to then, you know, jump forward. And the fourth piece I think I'd talk about is with your users, don't just look at your lens of the user. So if we're talking about broadband, don't just look about how they use broadband and what their broadband demands are. Look at their life, because it's things like their gym subscription or how they use their mobile phone, et cetera, that actually shape what they expect from broadband. Because, you know, I talk about Amazon defining how we see e-commerce. It doesn't mean it's the best, but that's how people sort of experience it. So if you then have an e-com platform, there are certain functionalities or expectations that Amazon's already created without you doing anything. So you've got to think wider than the world that we operate in.
That's so cool. And we've talked a little bit before, and you are really customer obsessed. And this is kind of like the theme for today's episode, if you like, because one of our digital principles here is to be customer obsessed and across the different range of industries. If we take your time at Xbox, for example, do you mind just telling us a little bit about the story there? I love this story. Yeah,
absolutely. So I joined in a strategy capacity I did various things like looking at what the proposition was across the EMEA region, so Europe, Middle East and Africa. And how much it should vary by market, what the pricing should be. I had a great boss. I think often most stories start with a great boss. He said, hey, Shweta, have a think about what else we could do. How can we change the business beyond what it is today? And I saw two things were happening. One was people were starting to stream content onto their laptops. It happened in lots of other industries, but actually TV content had just started to people watch it on their laptops. And the second thing, we'd done a few trials with Canal Plus and Sky to build this very big and complicated app to get them on Xbox. And I thought, do you know what, there's a sweet spot here. Why don't we build this really great, scalable, easy to build for platform so that anyone can watch TV content on their Xbox. Why an Xbox? Because it's the biggest screen in the TV, in the house. So go from that small screen that you're on there to suddenly the biggest TV in the house, it changes how you view television. So I was so excited about saying, well, look, people are already doing it. Let's just make it easier, right? It's high usage because they do it every day. Everyone watches TV every day. And on demand is on the rise. So let's just make that easier. So I built out that process there. And the second piece there, you asked about how do you sort of have that conflict, you know, and make... Make such a thing. We with Xbox One, I spotted a gap when early days we were designing the product. Obviously, it's very secretive, so I got let into the room quite late. But I said, "Hey, we're missing something here," and I came up with a solution. And you know, it was an accessory, and I had strong views about how that should be positioned in market. You know, and the price point of it. And actually, that was just a really good example where the company obviously thinks about the financial gain, rightly so, but I was also thinking about customer. You know, why should they have to pay more for something that someone in the US gets for free? And I think you always have to be customer assessed. And a mistake people make is read the data and not read the context. And so the data there was around HDMI adoption in the UK, an assumption that HDMI meant expensive or high demographic customers, and it didn't. You know, they didn't recognise the BBC as an entity and how powerful it is in the content place. So I think there's you've got to understand the customer at the core roots of it, not just read the data or what someone tells you about the customer.
Yeah, for sure. And how difficult were those conversations? Because you were really passionate and you had this idea that, you know, you didn't need to really compromise on because you were obsessing about the customer, but you must have had pushback in that room.
Definitely. I mean, I think this is a games company, right, at its core, and it's wonderful at it, you know, market leading. And having someone saying, hey, let's put TV on there, and TV could be the future. You know, Xbox notoriously had a bit of a challenge with having this entertainment device and the perception. But ultimately, people were already doing it. And so it was a case of let's take some of that pie, because otherwise our pie is getting PlayStation all over it, etc. So it was a really difficult conversation. And for me, it's about consistency and persistence. And believe me, there were times when I'd say to my boss, I don't want to go onto that call with the execs because you know, I'm just going to get eaten alive. And he was a great manager and said, nope, it's your baby. You believe in it. You are passionate about it. You keep going. So it's partly me, but it was also partly having a great support system that said, go pitch it. But ultimately, I'm a firm believer on if it goes wrong, if you put the right risk systems in place, yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, because you won't fail that badly because you've put the right systems in place to mean that it's managed and it's kept in a small scale.
That's great. So you're given the environment to fail. You had the courage to then go and try, right?
Yeah, because I think anyone who tells you they've had everything perfectly, I think there's a bit of a, you know, misleading you slightly there. I think everyone's had trips and falls. I'm thankful I've not had a major fail. But certainly if I could go back and do my career again, I'd do things something slightly differently. Yeah. You know, some of the things that were obvious now, I didn't know then, but that's part of how you learn. And it's part of your gut instinct that you develop and you learn from that. So I think failure is good. I really embrace it.
No, for sure. And how did you take the feedback at that stage? Because we've got a good story, actually, because we met for the first time a couple of weeks ago and I might have been in a similar room to what we're in today.
It could have been.
And I was showing you my product and, you know, you fed back and... it was one of the like most eye-opening things. And, you know, we were saying, you know, if you've been looking at something for so long, then some stuff begins to blur a little bit and you need that external view coming in. And then when someone says something, it's like, oh, actually, that actually makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, we went and changed the product and, you know, I think we've got a better customer outcome for it, for sure. But, you know, how do you stay true even to like a room full of opinions?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone has an opinion, you know, and it's hard to gauge which one is right. How do I personally take feedback personally, which I shouldn't, and I know I shouldn't, but I am human. And I think that's the first thing, you know, we are humans and it does hurt when our hard work and our sweat and our grit is being challenged. But I think if you sort of take you out of it and think, well, hold on, where are we trying to get to? And does it help get there? That's helpful. I actually listened to a really good podcast by a former Red Arrows pilot, and I'm obsessed with clearly military and fast planes. but what I loved about his story is how after every sortie, so every flight they do, and they fly three or four times a day, they debrief. And the power of that debrief is essential. But one thing they do really well is they take names out of it. So they'll say, Red 1, you did this. Red 2, you did this. And so it dehumanizes it a little bit and it becomes about how do we work together as a team? Because you've got, you know, 9 pilots flying very closely, you know, next to each other. So they have to work in unison. They have to be a team. And I like that about being, you know, less about the person and you did this and you did that to actually Red 1, your positioning was slightly, you know, whatever it might be. So I think the debrief is really, really important. And I think what we tend to do is wait for a quarterly cycle or a check-in. And I think actually debrief regularly with your team, encourage critiquing. As long as the objective is positively moving forward, great. If it's about personal ways of doing it, don't worry about that. Think about the outcome. You know, I think people get too focused on how versus what are we trying to achieve.
Yeah. And speaking about sort of what to achieve and how to achieve, and we talk a little bit about the measures of success. I want to know, like, from your personal perspective, you know, your history, how have you measured your own success over this period of time in all of these different industries?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, don't compare is the first thing I'd advise. I think it's really dangerous because we're all on a different path. And I think what's important to me might be very different to what's important to you, and that's fine. Compare it, how do I measure my success? I'm motivated by doing fun things, building fun things, doing good, giving good back into the world. I say solving difficult problems, that excites me. And I like reimagining things. I like sort of saying, well, it was done A to B, but actually there's another way. That excites me. So that's personal success stories for me. I'm really proud of what I did at Xbox because for me that is a career defining moment where I really did challenge the whole system and say I want to do it differently. But now I could look at some of my contemporaries and my peers and I can think, wow, they're doing amazing things. And that's great. You know, their success is no reflection on my success. But ultimately, you've got to do what makes you happy and find a workplace and team that support you in the way you work. I think we talk a lot about diversity. And diversity for me is completely, yes, the demographic side of it, but also about diversity of thought. And I think when we can get to a workplace where anyone's way of thinking is encouraged, that's a great place because you'll get better products and services as a result.
Awesome. And in terms of product successes, you know, you're known for being very, you know, commercially driven. In fact, you know, the products you build are very successful. How would you advise our listeners who are sort of building products, you know, although, you know, make sure that the customer's at the heart of it, you know, how would you measure the success of those? What kind of KPIs would you use?
Yeah, I think, so an important thing here is we can sometimes be a bit too inwardly focused on revenue, cost reduction, margin. And we need those to be successful, of course. I'm not disputing that. But I think we also need to take a step back and think about, right, if we're looking, take customer service. If we're thinking about reducing the time to a call, that's great. What's the bigger picture here? The bigger picture is, why are they even ringing in the first place? What is that outcome we're trying to get to? What is something in the product and service that's not working right that people are ringing up? Because you'll have technical issues, that's fine. But that KPI is a bit, it's a bit of a, not red herring, that's the wrong way of thinking about it, but it's kind of a side thing. What's the fundamental problem? Let's not plaster over a crack. Let's actually go, what's causing the crack? So I think sometimes, you know, you need to look at your KPIs and think, actually, are these truly consumer driven? Are these really driving the impact and the change for the user? Because they're often internal measures. They're often about how we work as a team and how quick and faster we produce things. Whereas actually user impact and engagement's a great one. So frequency of usage, we always want more. Actually, less could be good. So if you're a product that is around security or the safety net for a user, them checking in is not a good thing because they're having to check something's okay. Whereas actually a low engagement is what you're after, but you're still there as that safety net. Awesome. So I think it really depends. So I don't mean to...
No, cool.
You know, it'll all depend on what products and services you're looking at. But I would always start with, of course, what's driving success for the organisation, have that as a focus, but then really double down on what's consumer changing. You know, what will drive the change for them in their experience? And what do those metrics look like?
Awesome. And if we go on to sort of the learning part of your career, what would you say have been your biggest learnings from these industries that you've been involved in?
Well, I think in every industry is different, but every industry is the same. Every company has the same problems that they're facing. I think now one of the biggest challenges is we call it digital transformation, but I'd actually say digital is just now a part of everyone's world. So irrelevant of what you do as a company, everyone in their life uses WhatsApp and they have digital TV services, they listen to digital radio. It is just part of how we operate. And I think that shift to digital now is one of the biggest things that people have to do. So I think there's definitely a reflection of what's going on outside and we need to bring that into the office. So the world is shifting and let's not lose focus on that. Personal learnings is back yourself.
Yeah.
Right, actually, I mean, I think we are human, so I get it, but there is something around have faith and conviction in your gut, have faith and conviction in your ability, your superpower, but do your research. So I always say that as a strategy consultant, I used to think that I had 80% of the solution instantly, and my instinct was telling me that's the right thing, and then I spend 20% of the time going figuring it out and backing up with data and validating it so I could prove it to everyone else. And so there's something in that for everyone, which is your gut's telling you a good thing, but now go and prove it so that other people can get on the same, you know, train as you or boat as you or plane as you.
I love that percentage, and I'm going to start using that now in the back of my mind whenever I'm trying to go and prove something as a product person. That's amazing. And I want to talk a little bit about culture and businesses as well, because as you mentioned, given your industries that you've been in the world is changing and we've just come out of a pandemic, and I'm getting the feeling that many people don't know what like a good culture kind of looks like at the moment. And you've had to go into many different places and, you know, change mentality, mindset, you know, and almost create culture. Yeah. What would have been your key experiences in sort of driving cultural change?
Definitely. I mean, companies, I think Disney, Xbox, Navico, which is the marine electronic company I work for, all of them, my role involved someone else's world being broken up to give me a part of it. So you're already starting on a bit of a negative thing there, and you have to get buy-in. And I always think it's really important to understand what drives someone. If you understand what drives them, it's easier to convince them or help them. And I think that was certainly something at Xbox. Microsoft is a very matrix organization. You end up working with 20, 30 different groups. Transparency was key. I over-communicate. I over-shared what I was up to, because then if people wanted to be involved, my door was open. It was hard work for me. You know, yeah. I spent way too much time with people and talking about stuff, but actually it paid off because then people felt that they knew what I was up to and they had a voice and a seat at the table. The second thing I think is empowering your colleagues. So pick your battles. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. Just, you know, as long as you get to the right outcome, does it really matter who does it? As long as it's a representative product or service, that's a good thing. But defining culture is tough. It comes from the top, it comes from below. For me, it's important to be the change. I've got, I sound like I'm saying lots of cliches, but it's be the change you want to see in the world. Operate the way that you want to see in the organisation and call out behaviour that's not aligned to that. I think that's really important. Be allies to your teammates. You know, if they've got a good idea, make sure they get the airtime to be able to talk. Likewise, if something's not great, call them out on it and say, hey, look, that could have been delivered a bit better. Because that's how you change. If you don't say anything, nothing's going to change.
No, that's awesome bit of advice there. And do you mention this as at the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned of a mentoring that you've done. How important is it for you that, you know, you continue to do that on top of everything else? And did you have good mentors?
And that's partly, actually, you know, funnily, that's partly why I think it's really important. So my parents are doctors, so I had no business exposure as a child. At school, I think it was encouraged like law, accounting, doctor, all the sort of very professional jobs. I had no one to look to, and I think that was a real problem. So I'm now mentoring at my old school, which I think is great to do, because like, it's just about saying, hey, there's another way you could live your life. So I didn't get any of it, but when I think it will have been my internship at university, so I interned at KPMG and Goldman Sachs, that's pre-Air Force, and that gave me exposure to business and strategy, and I thought, this is what I want to do. For me, it's really important because, you know, I've had opportunities that I've worked damn hard to get, and it's all on me, you know, no one's given it me, but if I can at least pay a bit of that forward to share my story, then I'm absolutely, my door's open, I always say to people on that. I now have an informal network of mentors. You know, roles come up, I will ring them and say, hey, what do you think? What am I not thinking about? I think it's really important. And I think the day you stop learning, it's a problem. Yeah. You know, there's always something you can learn from someone else. And it's not just up. I think, again, that's a mistake, to just think you need to have mentors that are more senior than you. Have mentors at your level and below you, because you'll learn a lot.
Exactly that. I love what you just said there, because to me, that a bit of leadership comes into that. If I'm doing something, for example, you know, I always think, you know, as a leader of something, even if it's just a podcast thing, how can I elevate someone else as well? How can I help them to get to the next stage? And that's been, you know, something really important for my personal journey. How have you sort of perceived sort of leadership? You know, you've obviously with the mentoring, but, you know, across different businesses, do you have a particular style that you lead over?
I hope to think that I let people get on, because, you know, if I'm so focused on the outcome, then I don't care how people do it. I'm supportive, I'm encouraging, but when I'm stressed, I fall into the same traps that everyone else does, which is results, results, results. And I have to check myself to think, no, hold on, they're getting there, and be realistic, because I think sometimes we do think we're robots and we do think we can operate the same every single day. I'm a big advocate of recognising that women work to a monthly cycle and hormones fluctuate as a result, and therefore we can't expect us to perform the same every day. Doesn't mean we're not as effective as a guy or anyone else, it just means we operate differently. But are we going to get to the same goal? Yes. So I hope to think that I'm a good person to say, whatever you want to do, however you want to do it, I'll go. I'm pretty famous for being the manager that would say, where do you want to be in 5 years? And by the way, I don't care if it's not in this company, because that's important to me. It's important to me that development goals are a priority. So I would always have in my check-ins a little section on development. What have you done? I would push people to say, what have you done on your development? Because it's not for me to do, it's for them to do. But all I can do is give them an environment that is supportive. But I'm very focused on changing, moving the needle. You know, that's what I'm about. And I think, challenging the status quo is probably how people would describe me as a leader. Working with me day to day, it's high energy, it's a bit random, you know. I think very quickly, but it's a lot of fun. I'd like to say we have fun.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're really personable as well. And
I hope so.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the most important thing as well. You know, building personal relationships with people is, without doubt, the cornerstone of a successful business.
I think being vulnerable as well, because I think when you get to know someone and who they are and what makes them tick, and actually that it's not all perfect, you tend to go a bit easier on them. And so I always encourage, you know, people to just be honest and say, actually, that was a really tough meeting for me. How did you find it? You know, versus assuming everyone else thought it was fine. You know, I think just being human helps.
Cool. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of today's DigiPod, but I could talk to you all day. Honestly, I really could. I want to take a little look back just before we go, and a little look forward. So if you could give yourself a piece of advice when you were just starting off, you know, you're interning in these companies, you can go back and speak to that Shweta, what would you say?
Gosh, I think, and actually someone gave me this advice recently and I'd forgotten it, and it was go for what you want. My first half of my career, so that learning phase, I was unstoppable. You know, I didn't see doors, I just saw space for me to run through. And I think as we get older, we tend to start doubting ourselves more and think that things are less possible. So I would have said back yourself more, and whatever you want to achieve is possible, which is partly when my Air Force story, because I think someone said to me, well, you can't do that. And I was like, well, let me show you what I can do. Yeah. So I definitely sort of say back yourself, have confidence, have faith and keep at it, because you can do whatever you want to do.
That's amazing. And a question that I got asked on the Christmas episode of the podcast was, what would you ask yourself in 10 years' time? And I love this question because you get a really personal answer from the person. So 10 years from today's date, as of recording, what would you ask Shweta then?
Oh, I'd probably ask, are you happy? You know, what does your life look like? And for me, happiness is what positive mark have you left on the world? You know, your friendships, your family, that's one thing. But actually, I'd like to think I'm leaving the world in a better place for being in it versus negative impact and making people miserable, which I'm sure most people do. But I think, I'd like to think that I've left a positive mark. And I'd say, how have you done that?
Amazing. Shweta, you are an absolute legend. Thank you so much for coming on to this episode of that DigiPod. Hopefully we can do this again
soon.
Of course. Amazing. We'll definitely have you back. To everyone else, make sure you check out the previous episodes and this episode on all good streaming platforms. Shweta, thanks again.
Thank you.